You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved.
All right, so I was at a school today. I was talking to a media class, like a radio class. Up at York University.
What's your spiel?
Well, just talking about my history and all that. And how I got into the business and what I've learned over the years. You know, it was a Q&A and all that kind of stuff.
Where?
Up at York. So really cool spot. Great students, great kids, all of them ambitious. A lot of people in there. It was great. Awesome to be there. And
I have a difficult, but I don't want to interrupt, but I have a difficult time doing that. When you're talking to 30 kids and they all want to be you, it's like there's one you or one job. It's like a hard thing to...
Well, I don't know if they all want to be me. I think they all want to figure out their own path or whatever, and they were looking for some suggestions or help or advice or whatever, which I'm happy to do. I've spoken at a lot of different schools. Not that I'm like Bobby Big Wheel here, but every once in a while you get asked to come out.
And what is the Tony first question Robbins. You get about O?
Generally speaking, what's he really like?
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot
they don't
of it's
ask
PG.
You that.
Are you kidding?
Know.
They ask him that the first or second question.
Well, what I wanted to get to here was they asked me, you know, one of the questions that came up was, what kind of material generally gets the biggest reaction from the fan base? What kind of material that you guys spew out onto the air?
Newfoundland and Labrador, because I'm getting hammered right now.
And the first thing I said is, honestly, we all have sports takes. I've never experienced this. I've been doing radio for a long time, though. I've never experienced, you know, 2 years later, hey, your Kawhi take, what a take that was 2 years ago. I was in the car. I heard that. But our Newfoundland and Labrador takes are going to come up now for the next decade.
Well, in fairness to me, I lived in the States for 35 years, so I wasn't here when this happened in 2001.
Yeah, but you're the only smart one here. You should know this.
Yeah.
I didn't get the note.
You should have known this.
2001... I'd been in the States for 20 plus years and was going to be there for another 10. So I got to get a little bit of a pass, but it's my buddies that are hammering me too.
Well, you're trying to get that's a cop out, Pooley.
It is a little bit
one,
of a cop out.
One for all for one here.
We're it is.
All
I'm, in this in. I'm in.
We're
I'm
all in.
In
this together.
I'm in.
The stupidity of it all.
I'm in.
Okay, I don't care about the whole population thing. I didn't know. I've never been to Newfoundland. I don't know the population of the
I
province.
Have been. Okay. 10,000 people met us. Our plane landed in. To play a hockey game there, and 10,000 people were at the airport.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, there's 515,000 more of them on the island. 525,000 people is the population.
Pretty good representation.
That's great. But the Newfoundland and Labrador stuff, I always thought it was just Newfoundland.
Well, it happened in 2001 that they merged the names.
Apparently, the two have been amalgamated, and it's officially Newfoundland and Labrador. My bad. Excuse me. You got it right, O.
Yeah, the commercial, man. Come to Newfoundland and Labrador. Visit Newfoundland and Labrador.
I always thought that was just a tourism thing. Like, I didn't think Labrador was even a part of Newfoundland.
But that
I didn't
could
know.
Be two different places, though. They want you to come to both of them.
Exactly.
Well, regardless of what it is, we still don't know where the hell Labrador is. or what it is.
It's on the mainland. I know that. Newfoundland's an island. Labrador's on the mainland.
You got to go through Labrador to get to Newfoundland, clearly.
I guess. So anyway, we're just getting roasted online.
We are.
People are crushing us. Some guy said, this is the dumbest conversation I've ever heard in radio. Three grown men cannot be this misinformed. Whatever.
Apparently we can.
Yeah. Wait till we get to our Leaf and Raptors takes. You want misinformation?
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. It's coming.
We live in a vacuum. We live in a sports vacuum.
That'll be the fifth dumbest thing we say today.
I guarantee you it'll get worse. That's our slogan. Oh, you thought that was bad?
Yeah, hold your beer.
Blue Jays bullpen.
How about that? Ryan Tepera, John Axford. Axford is done.
Axford, Notre Dame kid.
That's your guy? Canadian guy?
Yeah.
But Ryan Tepera, how terrifying is it whenever you hear
elbow.
That there's... Elbow inflammation, and he's going to see the Tommy John guy.
As soon as I hear elbow stiffness, I'm like, that's Tommy John.
Their bullpen was going to be pretty depleted and thin anyway. Their whole roster is thin and depleted.
But doesn't every pitcher at some point have Tommy John surgery? It's just a matter of when in his career he has it.
Feels that way.
Because the arm is not meant to do what they do. It's not.
No, and he's been worn out the past couple of years. He's had a lot of appearances. John Gibbons, man, did he love going to Ryan Tepera.
Your tendon is not meant to do what it does to throw a ball 100 plus miles an hour.
Yeah. So it's not a good sign. And now they're scrambling to find a couple of extra arms out of the bullpen. They start next week. You know, they start next week. They're up here at the Rogers Center with Detroit in town. So they were already, again, thin in the bullpen. They're thin in the rotation. The bats aren't going to be alive until Vladdy comes up and maybe Bo Bichette at the end of the year. I really can't pick one fraction of this roster that I feel even lukewarm about. The bats, the starting rotation, the bullpen, I don't feel great about any of it.
Waiting. You feel good about waiting for Bichette and Vladdy.
Yeah, it's a
process.
That's
what you feel good about.
I guess we're in the
process.
They
will be the Houston Astros of 4 years ago.
I'm not sure how they get to 70 wins. I'm not sure how they get there. You know, could they stick around 500 for the first 2 or 3 months? Maybe. I don't see it.
No way.
I don't see it. But, you know,
Tampa
maybe.
Tampa Bay's actually going to be pretty good this year.
They had 91 wins last year.
The other two teams up in the Northeast there, they're usually pretty good.
Yeah, I think the Yankees and Sox would be okay.
Yeah, they'd be okay. They're normally pretty good.
Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Ray, have you ever been to Newfoundland and Labrador?
What? What did you just say?
Have you ever been to Newfoundland and Labrador?
I've been to neither.
Okay.
Did you know the name was Newfoundland and Labrador?
Aren't they two different places?
You ever heard of Labrador? I don't even know what Labrador is. I thought it was a dog that roamed around Newfoundland.
Yeah. Just
what?
It just wanders around.
Yeah, yeah, it's like he's taking a dump over there in the field. That's the Labrador.
Oh, that's outstanding. Yeah.
I'm in studio today, Ray. How do you think it's going for me?
Learning some stuff,
are
you?
Well, we're in geography class right now. We're not doing very well.
No, Pooley's got a reputation of being a smart guy, and we're trying to drag him down as much as possible.
Well, see, this is why smart guys like Pooley align themselves with guys like us, because right. They don't even have to try. They're like, the teacher looks and goes, look at those three idiots, and, oh, Dave's a real smart guy. Let's give Dave the captain of the class. That's what happened.
Yeah. Pooley is the beneficiary of the bell curve, because someone's got to get an A. And it's not going to be these three idiots over here. So you get it by default. But you should have heard.
Actually, Ray had an A on in the picture I sent him today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Which one was that?
He was.
I was speeding away from Tim Kerr.
Yeah, it was a picture of.
There,
yeah, you really looked like you were moving quickly. There was a bit of a blur. You were going on offense, and Tim Kerr was not really thinking about playing defense at that moment.
No, this was Tim Kerr with the Rangers. So this was post-Dave Poulin when Pooley got to play with the strongest man in the world.
Yeah, you weren't worried about that anymore. Wow.
Cool. I didn't have to worry about Pooley. I could win a face-off because whoever they had wasn't as much of a pest as Dave was. Dave took face-offs way too serious. Like
I was limited in my other talents. I figured I could do something well. I was going to win a face-off. I think I could still win one and change. I changed pretty quick, though. I watch guys take draws today. I could win a face-off. Yeah, you
That's
get a career. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but would you need the wooden stick? Wouldn't that help you on the draw?
I was one of the first guys to go to aluminum.
Really?
I remember that. That was it a silver or gold Easton?
Christian.
With the Christian
Easton
blade?
Well, originally they said Christian on them. They were Easton. This was before Easton. So 83.
Hey, guys, do you remember when there'd be a little nick, a skate nick on the aluminum stick, and when it would break, the ping sound? That thing was like a sword. After you'd have like a sword in your hand because it was jagged aluminum that had just been broken off.
Tell you what, it was pretty good for slashing, though.
Really good
slashing. Fast offensive guys, yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't have anything on the old school, like wooden.
Oh, yes, it did.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
More so than like the 5-pound sticks?
Yeah, it got cold.
Yeah, the aluminum one was a good slasher.
Pooley, do you remember a guy named Bennett Wolf?
Sure.
He was playing for the Baltimore Skipjacks, and I was in my first year playing for Binghamton. There was a power play, and he came to the bench, and we were just getting set to go on. I was 20. I was like 160 pounds. And this guy reaches in, he says to the trainer, give me the solid ass. He was taking a tree limb out to kill penalty.
Just to slash and cross check.
And I'm like, I don't really want to go out on this power play.
Try seeing Stu Grimson take his elbow pads off before a shift. I was like, what the hell is this guy up to? Like, he's going to play a shift with no elbow pads? And then I found out very quickly.
Why?
Why? It was scary.
Nothing to grab onto when you're fighting.
That's a different world, man.
No kidding. I know you were calling your game last night, but the Leafs, they showed up last night. And Pooley did a hit on SportsCenter about Austin Matthews, and we were discussing it in the previous hour. He looks like he is amping up, because you saw him live a couple of nights ago in Nashville. He was even better last night.
Well, we watched the first two games, or first two periods before the Senators and Vancouver started. And, I mean, that game should have been 8-1 after two periods, and he looked fantastic. He looks like, when we talk about somebody dialing in for the playoffs, that's kind of what the last couple of nights have looked like to me. Like, he's a train, man. When he gets going, that is really tough to stop. There's a connection between the speed and how he uses his body. And I think over the course of the season, there's been times when that hasn't been there. But, man, he looked, the last two nights, he was locked in.
And you can see from a coaching standpoint, the coach just wants that more often. And, you know, when you're 21 or 22, you can't just dial it in for the playoffs. You're supposed to do that every night. When you're 31, you can dial it in for the playoffs.
I think you have to learn how to do it. You know, the every night stuff. I don't know. I found it easier as I got a little older to, you just know how to manage your energy and manage the schedule. When you're young, you'd have these spurts of, you know, where you'd play great for five or six games and then you just can't keep the energy anymore. Your legs don't carry you the same way. That's what I felt anyway.
And he's a big guy too. That's a big body he's moving around. Right? He is.
But as I'm thinking about it, I wonder what the sweet spot of minutes is for him.
I think it's got to be right around 20 minutes.
Yeah. I think it's more or less.
Right on it. Right around there. 20 to could be 22, it could be 19.
Because he's playing less than that now.
I know, I find that crazy.
Because I don't think it's 16, but I wonder if he can handle the 20.
Ray, I needed 18.
But we didn't, you didn't skate like him. Like,
I know, but if I played 16, I'd be like, I don't even feel like I was part of the game.
That's interesting.
There are times, I'm with you, because there are times you'd sit there and go, like, does he even know I'm here still?
Yeah.
You'd move your way to the middle of the bench because you're like, okay,
yeah,
this joker has totally forgotten me now.
You have to stand up every whistle to let him see your number and your name.
See, I had a guaranteed job because I was a penalty killer, and my team led the league in penalty minutes every year. That was the brilliance of it.
So would the coach even call it your name?
No.
You'd just go over the boards.
I had first guy over the boards for every penalty kill.
See, I had a job like that, Pooley, too, but it was when we took a too many men on the ice penalty.
You were going to serve it.
Oh, yeah. Didn't even ask. Just jump over the boards, go over there. They had, you get your own water bottle, and you could talk to the guys in the box, and that was my job.
But if you think about it, you know, we were going to take 6 or 8 penalties a night. So right out of the gate, I'm going to get, if I play half of that, I'm going to get 6 or 7 extra minutes. It's great.
Just think of how foreign that sounds to today's game.
I know. That was a light night.
That's like prehistoric to today's game. Like, I look at, like, there's how many times I do prep for a game, and you'll see a team hasn't scored in 5 games on the power play, and then you're like, oh, yeah, they had 1-0 for 0.
Exactly.
An 0-for-1, you're like, man, it's a different world.
As for the Buffalo Sabres and their side of things, we were talking about Jack Eichel as well. And, you know, we always bring up McDavid and his plight out in Edmonton, where he's going to miss the playoffs for the third time in 4 years. And we're always wondering, is that going to be it? Is he going to storm in and demand out? And that's not going to happen. But Jack Eichel has been there for 4 years, and he hasn't even sniffed the playoffs. Like, they're not even close. He hasn't played a meaningful game in March yet in his career. What's his level of concern looking like right now?
Well, I would be really concerned that there is no road out. Like, there's, you look at them and they weren't even close last night. If you look at the Sabres season, I think they've lost 17 of their last 19. They had that 10-game winning streak. I believe 8 of the wins were in overtime or shootout. Like, those aren't even real wins in my book, right? They're wins and they go in the win category, but they knew at the time that, ooh, this is not going to keep on rolling. And then when it came back to earth a little bit, it just fell off. And so you talk about Eichel. I think Ristolainen is he's a good NHL defenseman. Since February the 1st, he's been like minus 23. Like, I know it's not the stat it used to be, but it's a train wreck. Guys get worn down. They're young in their careers still, but all you know is lose, lose, lose. And those guys have not done a good job in Buffalo. I know Jason Botterill's only there a couple of years, but they've got to look at, like, they need major surgery there. They're a long, long, long way away.
We posed the question, would you rather take over the Edmonton Oilers or the Buffalo Sabres?
The Oilers.
That's kind of around the horn, wasn't it?
I mean, the Oilers have Dreisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, of course, McDavid, Nurse, Klefbom. You know, like, at least you can find 5 or 6 guys that you go, man, I'm pretty excited that those guys would work. And in Buffalo, you get quiet pretty quick.
Well, you got Eichel and you got Dahlin, who you believe he's going to turn into something special. I think Casey Mittelstadt got that whole World Junior bump, and he's a young guy trying to find his way in the league. Alex Nylander, I don't know if he's going to make the NHL.
What about Reinhardt for you?
See, I like Reinhardt. I know he's a bit of an outlier in the way the game is now. You know, he doesn't go super fast. He doesn't have anything that looks really powerful to him, like a shot or anything, but he's smart. I think he can be a complementary player. When he plays on the wing, that's when he can play that give-and-go game. He gets to the front of the net well. He's got good hands. He's smart. To me, he's a top-6 forward. He's a top-6 winger, best suited on your second line. And there, of course, they've got him, you know, they've got him on the top line. And I would like to have a winger in front of him. But I would have him in my top 6. I think that kid can produce offense.
So Andrei Vasilevskiy made, 56 stops last night?
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Pretty good. And that would be so terrifying for me if I'm any other team going to the dance, because Kucherov's probably going to win the MVP. And if he's not the best player in the league, he's in the top 3 or 4. Hedman might be the best defenseman in the league. They got depth everywhere, 1 through 12 up front. A couple of banged-up guys on the back end, but 1 through 4 anyway. Their top 2 pairing is very, very high quality.
Tell you what, that Cernak is a player.
He can play, man. And
don't forget, he came from L.A.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we often talk about the way a team gets put together, it's not just your amateur scouts, although Al Murray, who heads the amateur side in Tampa, would know Cernak from the World Juniors. He played in 4 of them. But he was young enough that you know, they could have tapped into what Al Murray had on his notes. The pro side would have seen him in the American League. And L.A., I think that was a Peter Budaj thing, when Budaj was going back and forth.
Yeah, it was.
And they end up with Eric Cernak. Like, man, that's another win for their scouting department.
Well, and then even if, for whatever reason, they all played the worst game of their career, you've got to go through the best goalie in the league.
He had a pretty good tender back there.
Like, I don't see how you beat this team.
He had a nice rest this year, too.
Yeah, he took a month off.
Yeah.
And they lost one game, I think, without him.
Domingue came in.
But that's multiple times he's done. He did that to the Leafs a couple of months ago when he came back from injury. He made 49 stops, I think.
That was his first game.
Right, first game back. Last night, 56 against the Caps. That game wasn't even close.
Now, just think, somebody's going to break knuckles to get into the playoffs, and they're sitting there.
How do you beat them? How do you beat Tampa? How?
Well, I guess you know, because nothing's impossible. I mean, I guess you hope for what Like, we, when we beat Pittsburgh, and, you know, it's 93, it's forever ago, but our goalie, Glenn Healy, played the series of his life. Their goalie was Tom Barrasso. He didn't play very well. They didn't respect us at all. And we just kind of, we hung around, and we, you know, our power play was good. We got one game, Tom Fitzgerald scored two shorthanded goals on the same penalty. Like, all these things that never happened, or never happened, happened. That's how you beat Tampa right now.
And you're thinking about their power play. They got three last night out of three, and it just looked eerie. Like, you better not take penalties against them. You better not try and rough them up.
Was the Kucherov goal, was that the one?
It was one of the three power play goals.
What was that? Harlem Globetrotters.
Well, the thing about Palat in front of the net.
Amazing.
It looked like a guy, you know, when a guy is totally shell-shocked and he's in a miserable slump and he has no confidence and he won't shoot it? That's what it looked like, except that wasn't what it was. That was a fully confident guy who said, man, I'm just going to lay it off to Stammer here, who then said, no, I'm not in a perfect position, so I'm going to lay it over to Kucherov.
Well, look at the defenseman. When you watch that, the defenseman was spinning around like a top. He's like, he didn't know who to cover, and then all of a sudden it's in the net.
He might have been backwards when it went over his head.
Man, they are so fun to watch, and they're so fast, and they're so deep. And the other thing is, outside of last night, teams get a lot of shots against them, but they don't get a lot of real quality, I don't believe. And so while Vasilevsky's amazing, for the most part, Tampa just kind of, they just come at you wave after wave after wave, and you, it's like you can't breathe. And all of a sudden you're down 4-1 again, and you're like, oh, there goes the game.
It's not going to be easy for anybody. But I'm looking even beyond that first series.
It never is. There's no such thing as an easy playoff series when you're starting. It's whoever you line up against, you're going to convince yourself, and everybody's going to convince themselves that this is the hardest matchup you could have possibly ended up with at some point. You got to beat them.
But do you ever really believe you can win it?
Yeah, sure,
like,
you do.
Always believe.
Well, Ray's just telling you they won one of the most unlikely ones, and
yeah.
Okay, but the next year, we played the Rangers when they won the cup. They beat us in four. Noodles was the backup goalie, the Hextall, in that series. That series should have been over in three. They should have just sent us home. We had no chance.
You were still living off the previous year, were you?
Oh, my. We're like, look at this team. Like, we didn't have a chance. Brian Leetch was putting on a clinic. It looked like he had toothpick in his teeth. Like, he didn't break a sweat. He was just one, you know, sometimes you just know, even though you grind away at it, of course you do, but you just know, man, this team's way better than us.
They had some pretty cagey vets on that squad,
I would say. All right, buddy. Well, we'll do it again tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Okay, talk to you, boys. Have a good one. Pooley, keep holding the ship up, would you?
Take care.
Good luck with that, Pooley. There's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's the 2019 Toyota RAV4, the safest SUV. See for yourself at Maple Toyota. Get rates from 0%, mapletoyota.com. Grab yourself a Maple Toyota and drive off to lovely
Newfoundland and Labrador.
We are big supporters of that whole province. It's all about education on this show.
We're learning. We are learning.
I think it's important.
Who's being educated here?
I think it's important. We've dragged you into the muck here, Pooley. I'm sure you're really happy you brokered that deal with Noodles now. This will stick to the resume for a while. Ichiro hanging them up in Japan earlier this morning. We'll get into that. JP Arancibia will join us in about a half an hour. And our grittiest two towns in Ontario are battling it out on Twitter right now at Overdrive 1050. Sudbury versus Oshawa. It's neck and neck. Get to Twitter and vote. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, TSN 1050's Up Close and Unfiltered series is returning just in time for the NBA and NHL playoffs. It's all happening down at Toronto's Amsterdam Brewhouse down on the Queen's Quay. TSN 1050's playoff headquarters on Monday, April 8th. So Monday, April 8th, all of your favorite TSN 1050 personalities will be there for the night, talking Leafs, Raptors, no charge, no tickets required, to show up April 8th before 8 p.m. and get ready to talk playoffs with everyone from TSN 1050. So the Oakland A's, they were told, I'm sure, you're going to Tokyo, and you're playing two games against Seattle.
And weren't they official games?
Official games.
The games are going to count.
They count. They are 0-2 in the standings. divisional rival. The A's have been a pretty good team for a number of years. And they go all the way over there, and they lose both games. And now they got to come home and basically kill a week and prepare for an unofficial start to the season next
week. And play spring training games.
And play fake games again. It makes no sense.
I don't know how these teams are selected, whether management has a say in it, but I would always be, don't even call me, we're not doing it. I know it's a money bill. I don't know, what is it, a money grab? I don't know, but I just don't want my team that
distraction.
When
teams come back, generally, they go straight south. Look at Ottawa. It was Ottawa. That was Duchesne's first games, correct?
Right. Yeah, he got traded, and they played Colorado. It was Colorado,
and they went
Ottawa.
Straight south.
Mm-hmm.
Straight south. Now, normally there's some sort of, I mean, they'll try and get the local players. So if Winnipeg's going to Finland because of Line A, next year Voracek, they're playing in the Czech Republic, correct? With Voracek, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's some sort of, you know, it used to be thrown at us and be like, well, you know, it'd be great for team building. It'd be great. Yeah.
I would avoid it at all costs.
Yeah.
But
it hasn't worked out very well for most teams.
No. And these are two teams. They're not necessarily big brands. Seattle, the Mariners have a bit of a brand. Oakland is just
all about Ichiro.
It's all about Ichiro. It's all about the fact that they're on the West Coast. So, you know, technically it's closer for them to fly across the Pacific Ocean. But this whole Ichiro scene this morning, it was emotional. It was cool. But the idea that it was anything but manufactured and premeditated is completely bogus and insulting to the intelligence of anybody that would accept that. Because they tried to break it as, oh, he walked into the office of the skipper this morning and said, I'm hanging him up at the end of the game.
No chance.
There's no chance. He didn't know.
Okay, 45 years old.
45. I'll go back to where I started my career, Seattle. And even before that, Japan. He's Japanese. He's the biggest icon. Like, my understanding is, we think, like, Gretzky's big here.
Yeah, he's larger than life.
Ichiro is, there's nothing close in Japan.
Because he had a huge career before he came here.
Yes. I think he spent, 9 years over there? 7 or 9 years. And he put up, and when he got here, he won AL Rookie of the Year, MVP, and he was on that 116-win Mariners team. But you know what I actually was surprised by? Because I went back and looked at the stats. He's never been a power hitter, as we know.
No.
He was never a guy with huge OPS. He didn't walk as much as I thought he was going to, considering his role.
You can still see that swinging bunt hit when he's moving down the
line.
King
of the drag bunt.
King of it. And listen, he set a record that I'm not sure will get touched anytime soon. 10 straight seasons with 200-plus hits. I don't see anyone else coming close.
Yeah, he could hit a hole better than anybody could.
Absolutely. But if you go back and look at it, wins above replacement today almost determines everything in baseball in terms of a player's value.
Such a subjective number, too.
But it's become gospel. He didn't have the highest wins above replacement on his own team.
At his position.
Brett Boone. Brett Boone had a higher wins above replacement on his own team in Seattle. Now, he brought flair. You know, he was unique. He was an older rookie, 27, I think he was. And he had 268 hits or whatever. Like, he was unbelievable.
Yeah, he had it all going.
And defensively, he was brilliant.
He had
a bomb in right. But I don't think that would fly today. I don't think you pick up his season from 01 and plant it in 2019. I don't think he wins the MVP.
Even the way they enter the league with the bidding process that they do, and you buy those players. You get involved and buy them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't draft them. You buy them.
Full-blown bidding process. Mm-hmm. But I don't, just because of how much wins above replacement has become so prevalent in the conversation. And no baseball debate goes anywhere without bringing it into the context of the conversation.
So what is your interpretation of wins above replacement for an outfielder?
Well, I think what's important to point out is defensively, you know, that should be considered.
He was excellent.
And he was superb. He was a brilliant right fielder. You know, it's an inexact science. Like, even the baseball nerds
so
and sabermetrics will tell you
so
that
subjective.
It's not perfect, but it's as close to perfect as we have to truly place a value on players in baseball. And baseball is the most, you know, robotic sport. You're all facing the same guy. You're
all
in the same box.
The most numeric sport, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. The numbers speak for themselves. But J.P. Arencibia will join us in about a half an hour. We'll get his take on catching a guy like Ichiro. When Ichiro steps up to the plate and you're behind the plate, you know, how does that affect your psyche, your interaction with your pitcher? Because he was such a unique player, such a unique hitter. Great, great player. You see Rory McIlroy committed to the Canadian Open in 2019?
Well, is he in one of those, is he an RBC guy?
I don't think he is, though.
No.
Because he would have played already had he been.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if his sponsorship.
But that's got a new date, right? It's now they've shifted it, and it's before the U.S. Open?
Yeah.
So there are guys that want to play the week before the majors.
Well, they had the worst time slot for right after the British Open. Yeah. Was a joke.
Well, and it's at Hamilton this year, which my understanding is the players really
love
that course.
Yeah.
And, you know, Glen Abbey, that was always the place where, you know, that was home base for the Canadian Open for a number of different reasons, but it's not a great course for the pros.
Right.
You know, for a chop like me, I go out there, I'd love to play Glen Abbey.
It's a good chop.
Yeah, but if you're Rory
McIlroy.
Have you
played Hamilton?
No, I haven't.
You've played out there, oh.
Beautiful course.
I've heard it's outstanding.
Yeah, it's a great track.
But does that make it more likely that you got to get out there to see it specifically because of McIlroy?
They've been getting a pretty good lineup lately, though, because of the RBC thing, right?
Yeah.
Although they lost Jason Day, maybe. He went to Nike, and you can't have any other brand on your. I believe that's the way that works.
Well, then that would mean McIlroy isn't an RBC guy.
Yeah.
Because he's still with Nike.
Right. He's not, because he would have been here. That was a mandatory part of their Kuchar, DJ.
That's a good question. I don't know if I'd leave my house if someone here has two tickets to the Canadian Open and go watch Rory McIlroy. I don't know if I would.
Beyond Tiger Woods, is there anybody that would do that for you?
Dustin Johnson?
But he plays in it every year, oh.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I'm not talking about guys that make you get off your couch and go watch it. You know what? Maybe he would. There is one guy, though, and it's Tiger Woods.
Yeah, for me, there's one guy. Like, if it's Tiger, if Tiger's within my region, if I can get in the car and be there within an hour.
Have you ever seen him play live?
I have not.
It's magical. Absolutely magical.
Because
when he was moving crowds.
Yeah.
So from in the late 90s, early 2000s, we went to the Western Open every year in Chicago. And my girls were playing golf at that point. And the way he moved crowds was unbelievable. So one of the caddies told me, look, grab the first stall behind the first stall. Here's when he's teeing off. So we got behind the first stall in the practice range. They always gave him the first stall back then because if he walked along, he was too big a distraction to everybody else that was practicing. So they give him the first slot. So we're sitting waiting, and you can feel him coming. I'm going to say this is 99 or 2000. You can feel him coming. And he comes across, and he lines up, so he's 15 feet away from us. And then probably moving three holes of people at a time, like entire holes of people. Because you're going trying to get a couple holes ahead of him. That's how long it took.
Well, we've had this debate before. Which pairing would be more aggravated by the presence of Tiger Woods? The groups ahead of him, like right ahead, or the group right behind?
They're both leaving or they're coming or going. It's the same distraction.
Well, but it feels different. Like if you're in front, there's guys pushing to get up. You know, they're all
if
of a
you're
sudden,
in front, you're loving it because I got a big crowd today because they're patiently waiting for Tiger Woods. They don't really care what you do.
They're not getting there. They're getting there at least a couple of holes ahead. When I say three holes, you're three holes ahead.
Yeah.
If you want to watch them.
The guys behind, they're like, am I even in a tournament right now?
Yeah. See, I think
they're the poor bastard that plays with them. If this guy putts out and walks off the green, the guy has got a little 3-foot tester. He's got people moving all over the place. It's a major distraction.
Yeah, that's true. The guy playing with him would be awful.
Yeah, like if you got to just putt out after and you got a little 3-footer that's a tester for you and you're like, come on, people, like, can you wait for me? Because they don't care. They want to get the hell out of there.
They're gone.
Yeah. See, I think the group behind, it would be a tough shot to the ego because you're behind the guy. Like, especially if it's on the weekend, that means you're ostensibly ahead of him on the leaderboard. Yet you're launching balls into nothing. But at the same time, from a mentality standpoint, I think that would be great. There's no distractions. You've got no crowd.
So
the
not
whole
to
crowd
give,
left with Tiger.
Not to give a plug for the Canadian Open too early here, but is it ruled out that he's going to play this year?
I just assume he's not playing. He never plays the week before a major.
He
ever.
Doesn't play the week before a major ever?
No. But he used to, I think, maybe early in his career, but he hasn't done that in a long time. He's not playing. Which really, that always hurt the Canadian, because maybe his most famous shot, one of them.
Oh, it's one of them for sure.
Was out of the bunker.
On 18.
At Glen Abbey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that would have been what year? 01 maybe? Something like that. Early
2000s. Right in that same time frame.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame what's happened with the Canadian Open, because it's still great golf, and it's still, they do get a great
field.
It's
been pretty good. I've been going the last couple of years.
But forever, it was considered the fifth major. Like, Palmer was up here every year. Nicklaus came up all the time, right? Like, Tiger knew when he first got on tour, I got to go play the Canadian Open.
You were playing in the Canadian Open.
Now it's like, nah, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to make it.
I think now, they've done a good job the last few years of really improving that field. RBC has been a big part of it, obviously.
Well, RBC, because they're paying these guys, they got to be there, which is, that's fine. That's the name of the game.
No such thing as appearance money in golf. Sort of.
So they say. But if we're going to pay you to be our endorser.
Absolutely. You're coming to this tournament.
Yeah. We're going to have to ask you to be at our personal tournament. J.P. Arencibia will join us in about 25 minutes. Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider in studio. And we're going to get Tessa in studio to represent the city of Sudbury. And Mullins in here to represent the city of Oshawa.
He hasn't done a lot so far.
Mullen hasn't really done anything.
For Oshawa.
No. Well, he moved out of Oshawa, which I think speaks to the grittiness. But that said, so did Tessa.
He moved about 3 feet in the studio today, too, is about all he's done, really.
Yeah, that's his role. So we'll get Tessa Mullen in here. It's a real barn burner online. Sudbury versus Oshawa.
How are the numbers?
Last time I checked, I think, what was it, Al? I think Sudbury's like a 52% favorite right now.
Wow.
So it's real close. It's neck and neck. And the polls are open for another hour, just over an hour, on Twitter, at Overdrive1050. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN app. All right, J.P. Arencibia will join us in about 20 minutes, get his take on the bullpen issues for the Blue Jays. Mike Trout, his contract was made official. Locked in, 12 years in Anaheim. The Los Angeles Angels. Mike Trout, your boy, Pooley. Very unassuming guy, best player in the game.
Philly boy.
I wonder how Bryce Harper feels about it, because I kind of sense that Harper thought there was a chance he'd want to end up in Philly. And it never even got to a point where you could have a conversation with him.
He actually came out and said, I'll be getting my guy, Mike Trout, here.
Mm-hmm. Downright tampering.
Yes.
Like not dancing around tampering.
Yeah, player to player you can tamper, though.
And then unapologetic, too. The next day, they're like, do you want to clarify that? Because it felt like it was pretty blatantly tampering.
It is blatant.
No, I'm not... I'm not changing anything.
I'm getting him here.
Mike Trout, 2020. Mm-hmm. Lock it in.
Why are they tampering? Why do they even have it? It's like everybody does it in the big leagues. Like you're telling me an agent doesn't call a GM and it's like, hey, by the way, and in the summertime, that guy.
It's all about the optics.
This is the conversation, though. So how about my guy there? My guy. No names. You know, my guy. Like my guy? Conversation.
And the agent knows.
That's the conversation.
And the GM knows every day of the week.
What are you doing with your guy next summer? You know, your guy.
I guess that's not technically illegal. If you never actually name a name, you're not tampering. You can't tamper just for a guy.
Court of law.
So would it go a step further and then somebody say, my guy's probably looking, if you get it around that, my guy might be interested?
Yeah, he probably have a lot of interest, but What's that other guy make? You know, the other guy?
My guy really wants a no trade. That's what my guy wants.
You know, a lot of it, the agents, the good agents do a great job. I mean, they do. That's, you know, they do a good job of putting their player in the best possible position. And that would be considered doing homework. You're not waiting till the last minute to do homework. You're doing homework.
That's the role of the agent. What else are you doing? You're representing the
player. Get information. It's all about information.
Some big games in the NHL tonight. Montreal.
This is fun now. I mean, it's because everything impacts something in some way. Montreal's going to make it, Brian.
You think Montreal's getting in?
Yep.
Based on what, Pooley?
Carey Price. He's playing as well right now as I've seen him play. So
who's coming out? Columbus, in other words, or Carolina?
The last four games, they've lost two of the games. In the last four games, he's given up 6 goals. In the last four games.
Who's coming out?
Columbus.
Well, Bobrovsky's not playing tonight.
Columbus is coming out.
He's nicked up, according to Torts.
I guess that's why they went out and got Keith Kincaid. Of all the moves they made, that one I was like, what? Keith Kincaid?
Super depth move.
Keith Kincaid is to the Jackets as to Labrador is to Newfoundland. You know what I mean?
On the mainland.
No,
it's
I
on
don't.
The mainland.
Yeah, you do.
No, I really don't. But you're I do feeling at the it. Same time. I really do at the same time. Yeah.
You know what? I love Yarmo Cake Lane and going all in. I just don't like the team.
Well, I don't really.
I think I said it at the trade deadline. I'm like, I gave you a lot of credit. You got some balls, but your
huge
team's
credit.
Not, your team's
huge
not good
credit.
Enough for doing that.
They're just not good enough.
But Matt Duchene and whoever up the middle, the young
I
kid
like,
Dubois.
I like Dubois.
Yeah, it is. But that combination is not good enough to go all in any situation.
I like them better than the Habs on paper. I do.
I do too.
I don't love the Habs on paper at all. I love Carey Price if he's locked in. Mm-hmm. But up front, you know, they've gotten career years. Domi, Drouin, Tatar, these guys have been exceptional for them.
All of them have career years going. But they do it with balance, right? They're not worried. You're not going to shut down one guy or two guys because you don't know who's going to do it. I mean, their leading scorer is Gallagher. And
another career year.
Another career year scoring. And he comes to play. And quite frankly, they've been getting it done without Drouin, who's done nothing over the last month plus. And so if he does anything at all, their power play's 31st in the league. If they do anything at all.
That's my concern. Like, Carey Price can make all the stops in the world. I
well,
don't
I'm
think
counting
they can
it
score.
Sometime the pendulum goes the other way and Drouin actually chips a goal in or the power play gets it going a little bit. I mean, they got Shea Weber. They got components.
Well, tonight's a game. You got the Islanders who are coming off that Boston spanking.
Yeah, I did the last Thursday, week ago tonight, I was on Long Island. And did that 2-1 game.
They need to get rocking here. They need to
to win tonight.
They're only 2 points up on Pitt. Like, they're only two up now.
The Islanders have to get rocking.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's I'll take Columbus and Edmonton. Edmonton, it feels like they've just said that's enough.
Oh, they could win tonight for sure. You just don't know.
I have no faith in Edmonton. None.
Edmonton has mailed it in. They're done. They got crushed the other night by St. Louis 7-2.
Yeah, they look brutal.
And that's when a team is most dangerous.
But wouldn't you think a team that knows that they're fighting for their life would be more dangerous than that?
You would hope so. But, oh, you know the teams that drove up in the parking lot and they had their U-Hauls behind them already attached to their trucks and they play a great game and you look over them and go, where's that been all year?
Yeah, toe drags, snipes, power play goals. Dangles, who cares?
You played like that, you'd be an all-star. Instead, you're going home with your U-Haul after the game.
Well, Carolina's got Tampa tonight, too. Like, that's the race, those three teams. Montreal, Carolina, Columbus.
I think it's Montreal and Columbus. I think Carolina's in.
Really?
Yeah. They had a huge win against Pitt the other day. That kind of...
I hope so. That'd be a cool story. I mean, I goof on them a lot, but that'd be cool. Like, they haven't been in the playoffs in a long time.
Well, quite frankly, we've been picking them for a couple of years to be better.
Yeah, backdoor your way in.
They can never get organized.
And get smoked by Tampa.
Hey, Rod Brendamore has done a phenomenal job with that team. This is, this year more than any of the year, I vote for Coach of the Year for the Jack Adams on the broadcasters group. This is a year when you've got at least 8 or 9 guys. That should, like, you don't mention Brendamore's name. How is he not getting mentioned?
And you know what, Pooley? I think John Cooper just gets overlooked. Sometimes the greatness has to be respected and the coach has to get credit for that. Every year it's like, oh, let's hunt for the new guy. Let's hunt for the special story, the Craig Berube, who's been fantastic in St. Louis. But to blow the whole league away like that, the coach deserves some credit.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And I'll tell you who I voted for ever since I've had a vote and never won it, Joel Quenneville, for the same reason. Like, he'd win the cup and everybody'd say, yeah, but he's coaching Chicago. Well, managing that group is a really hard job. And I talked to Coop actually down at the All-Star game, and we talked about this exact thing. I think the job he's done managing that group of players is phenomenal.
Phil Jackson. Everyone downplays Phil Jackson.
Did he ever win Coach of the Year? He probably didn't.
I don't even know if he did. In
11
Chicago
rings.
Or L.A.
11 rings he never won Coach of the Year.
But it was always, he's got Jordan and Pippen or Shaq and Kobe.
Try managing those personalities.
Yeah, Steve Kerr, the same thing, right? Steve Kerr is the modern era of that in the NBA. J.P.R. and Sebia, Bob McKenzie in studio, Tessa Bonhomme in here representing Sudbury, Mark Mullen representing Oshawa. We'll look back on the Leaf win last night, the Raptors OT winner last night. Overdrive continues. Final hour up next on the TSN app.
You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved.